ready to go? Excellent. Well, hello everybody and welcome to the Talk to Danielle podcast. I am your host, Danielle C. Baker. And before we get started, be sure to like, follow, and subscribe to whichever channel you're listening or watching from. And of course, this is season three, so I do invite you to have a look at the two previous seasons. There may be some topics there that resonate with your reality today. So have a look. They are timeless, and I'm sure that there's something there that you will find that interests you. And we're going to jump right in today. I won't do a long introduction because I think she was just amazing. She is the introduction. I have the wonderful Alexis Neve with me. And we're going to be talking about it. This is a subject that I love. I'm very interested in. I don't talk about a lot, but I'm really happy that you're coming on today, Alexis, to join me. Thank you so much.
Thank you for inviting me. That's a really lovely conversation that we're going to have, I'm sure.
That's right. So you do a lot of energy work as spiritual work and all that, but you have a very unique approach, and that's what I was really interested about yours, because I studied quite a bit of Greek mythology back in the day. But can you kind of tell us a little bit about your approach to the work that you do? We'll talk about the work afterwards, but if you could introduce us to how you approach it.
Yeah, so my work in general, not just the one that you're alluding to, it lives at the intersection of identity, storytelling, and the undercurrents that people try not to feel. And the way I work with the myth that you're thinking about, because myths being stories, they allow us to tap into the feelings bypassing the rational mind, which is what normally blocks us from really going to the depth where you find the healing and the integration that really changes your life. So that is where that comes into play. I don't know if you want me to explain a bit more about what I do, since we not, haven't really mentioned
Yeah,
that
go
we're
right
talking
ahead. Yeah,
about
so give us an introduction and talk to about
it.
yourself. I did kind of skip ahead there. I'm all excited. So tell us about yourself and how you got to where you are today.
So I work across different media and disciplines, actually, which is kind of a stereotypical thing for like the artsy girl who daydreamed too much in school and then ends up with inattentive ADHD as an adult. But that is part of a big part of my story. The storytelling archetypes were always something that really fascinated me. One of the things that confuses me the most about the ADHD, since I mentioned it, my mother cannot see why I put myself forward for the diagnosis formally. And there was a kid who used to watch the Disney Robin Hood on repeat all day, every day. I was like, okay, I don't know how you don't see that one. But I was so enamored with these archetypal heroes' stories and all of the different emotions that you can experience when you're living through someone else. So it will not surprise any of you listening that I then ended up training as an actress for most of my young years. I actually started when I was about six. And I studied in the traditional Jacques Lecoq. For anybody who's familiar, you would know what that means. For those who are not, he founded pretty much physical theatre. It's a very embodied way of being in acting, similar to method acting in some ways, but not quite the same, where you're really embodying the truth of what's being put out there. It's very good if you're doing like improvisation because you get very good at reading the mood of what's going on and then just kind of like jumping in on the spot. So that's a big part of my approach to shadow work and identity recalibration, because I noticed through my own journey that it was only when I really started living out the mindsets and the shifts that I was doing in the inner work in therapy that it landed, which is that one of those jargon words that you have in the industry that nobody really explains. You have to sit through the discomfort of acting as the person that you want to be rather than the one that you used to be. So that is my way of using archetypes. They create something outside of us that we can embody up until the point where they become the identity we have. And at the same time, that's not about act like acting that you're being someone else. It's about revealing the truth underneath all of the things that you were told you had to be, which I'm sure that's something you yourself can relate, especially women, but I'm sure there's a lot for men as well. If for those listening, we all have that ideas of who we're meant to be that sometimes can be too heavy. And so we're playing
There's
out.
quite a bit of pressure there as well, where it's things that are expected from you and you don't feel quite aligned with it. So yeah, it goes both. It's very interesting. I'm gonna have to stay on track today because my mind is all over the place. But
Yeah, sure.
I'm so happy you mentioned this. This is something I don't mention a lot about myself, but I was that kid too that was just always kind of telling myself stories. My mom would told me that she used to sit in the hallway by the door of my room just listening to my stories. I used to tell, I was always in my little world. I don't talk about it because I do get embarrassed about the fact that but you're right. How do you ignore the signs when your child is fitting that world, and then you wonder, why is there a diagnosis later on? But I love that, and I love how you talk about having that story that's to break down the logical part of our brains. That's going to help me a lot with the work that I'm doing right now, to be able to get out of my head and actually do address the emotions and the trauma that's involved there. I love that. You do a lot of shadow work. Could you mention a little bit more, or talk a little bit more about how shadow work helps in releasing generational trauma, generational shame or guilt, and all of the other programmings that we've had where we're expected so much of us? Because a lot of people avoid the shadow work. It's a lot. It's not easy. It can get ugly, so we just kind of pack it away. So how does could you share with us how important it is to address that side of it as well?
Of course. Actually, I think that people are scared of shadow work a lot more than it's warranted
Yes.
because part of it may have to do with not everybody being able to hold the space necessary for that kind of emotional work. But it's also because sometimes we expect the emotions to be so overwhelming, and the fact that you're thinking, oh, if I have something really traumatic and I go do shadow work, that's going to be too much. Yes, because you're not supposed to do shadow work when you have that level of trauma. You can do shadow work alongside other modalities like EMDR that would remove the trauma as an imprint from your body. You can do it with like things like somatic releasing. There's a lot of options for getting yourself to the baseline where you actually then gonna release that kind of things like you were mentioning, the generational shame and those kind of things. Because I think a lot of people do not realize that shadow work is a very specific kind of psychological coaching. It's very rooted in, probably known to everybody listening, the psychology of Carl Jung that created this framework with the idea that we have a self, which is what we consciously believe ourselves to be. We have both the anima and the animus, which are the parts of us that are kind of like, some people call it the divine feminine, divine masculine. Like it's the principle of all these different qualities that we archetypally see as feminine and masculine that have nothing to do with the gender and sexuality and sex, biologically speaking, that we have. And then we have the shadow. And people do not realize that the shadow is neither bad or good traits. So you can have, if you're someone who's been raised to minimize themselves because you threaten the adults, because the adults were too insecure, you may have very good qualities in the shadow, like self-expression. While if you're kind of like more wanting, people were appreciating you more if you were like quiet and kind, then you would have like the more quote unquote negative sides like anger that you're not gonna have. Because the shadow is just the suppression of the traits that are not congruent with the idea of who you believe yourself to be, which is the persona in Jung's terms. So it's not something that's gonna go and work on the trauma. It's something that you do after you handled all of the emotional side of things to then reintegrate your identity to include all of the things that you were told were not acceptable. which then helps in kind of like trauma recovery. If people are familiar with the work of Dr. Gabor Maté, it really works a lot in normalizing for the medical profession the work of doing the inner work to heal physical symptoms. So it's kind of like adjacent disciplines. So people conflating what it is that he actually does kind of like get scared of digging too deep for what they can handle. That's not supposed to be what you do with a shadow work coach. Does that answer your question?
Yes, I like the fact that you clarified that because a lot of people, there's so many things around shadow work that people don't know about. A lot of them will associate to an evil side of, it's just because of the word shadow, I think scares people. But I like also the fact that you mentioned that it may not be for you yet if you're going through certain things, because then you're just adding to the wound, or you may not be able to face it because of the state that you're in. So I really do appreciate that.
So circling back to the generational shame specifically, that as a shadow comes from what other people that were not you were told was acceptable for them. And we know from epigenetics that we actually carry going back generations, all of the imprints of the culture at the time. So sometimes you may have responses on a somatic level. So in the body, you're feeling feelings that are not actually coming from you because they're not what you believe to be true about the world, but you're still having that charge from inheriting the ideas of what being whatever the identity is, maybe what being a good woman looked like for our grandmothers. Then, in that respect, when you integrate the identity and you start feeling safe being who you are, the shame dissolves on its own. But even if you're actually feeling feelings, it takes 90 seconds for a feeling to move through the body and being released. So that's
Oh,
something that a
wow.
lot of people do not realize. Even people in the coaching industry, because without naming names, I was in a training program for coaches on a modality that does involve some somatic aspects. And it's a very high profile teacher. And he was teaching people to, whenever you have a negative feeling, to just jump into self-regulating so that the feeling goes away. Because otherwise, your mind is going to start spiraling in negativity. And I'm like, no, if you sit with the feeling without attaching a meaning to it, the feeling takes 90 seconds and it's gone. And that's something that, especially in the spiritual space with all the high vibe only type mentality, that's why people do not make space for themselves to sit with things because they're scared that if they allow it in, they're gonna just like stay st stuck with the negativity. And that's just not the case.
Right. I love that. I like that have a number to it, because I was always taught to kind of look at it like a cloud going through the sky. You just sit with it and just watch it go. And but I like the 90 seconds is can be a long time if you're just sitting there waiting for it to get through. But I let and then it's released. I love that. I really do enjoy it. I kind of want to go through, because we talked about before when we first spoke about the sandwich generation. So the generations that are caring for their children, but also their aging parents, it can create a lot of inner conflict, I find, because when we're talking about generational expectations or those, there's certain things as a parent, when you're raising your children, you say, I'm not carrying that through with my child. So you're doing the work to make sure you don't pass those traits or those programming to your children, but then you're taking care of your parents, which brings it all back up at the same time. You're kind of in that turmoil, almost like a what are the whirlpools, it's just everything bubbles up. So can you share with us, maybe for somebody who's going through something similar or going through as a caregiver going through a lot, the signs or yeah, I guess I could say signs that you could be going through some challenges that you may need to be paying a bit more attention to take care of yourself while you're going through it.
So a lot of people think of dysregulation in like the most obvious way when you're like snapping on your kids because you're like too stressed. People are kind of like, that is obvious. But I see a lot in the kind of clients I attract, kind of what I would call like high functioning dissociation, to the point that you are so good at functioning that you do not realize you're actually anxious, because it doesn't look the same as someone who's so anxious that you're paralyzed, but you cannot relax. You can potentially, when you go to bed, you're not actually sinking down, you're just like bracing, and your body's just kind of like floating over the mattress. And it's very small, but it's ironically happened to me yesterday morning, actually. I woke up and I realized I'm actually feeling like a bit high up on the mattress, and I was feeling a bit anxious. And because I'm very attuned to my own body, I could tell that. But someone who's chronically living in that tension would not realize that there's something wrong, because that's their normal. Or things like you're numb, you have no pleasure, and you can like feel everything feels heavy, and you feel like you're stuck between a rock and a hard place, and you just kind of like, this is just what life is. But when you are in, especially for the sandwich generation, I see it as you have two identities that are clashing with two different expectations of what being good at that identity looks like. And that's especially true for people who come in from certain backgrounds, where taking care of the parents might be like the thing that you have to do, and is like socially frowned upon if you were to just like say, well, actually, I should put you in a nursing home or have a professional carer. So then you have that idea, am I being a bad daughter? And then you also have, I have my family that I have now that I have to take care of, that's demanding me things. And then you're kind of just like there trying to split yourself in two and forgetting yourself first. When if you start moving from that identity that you are yourself, you put yourself first, and you're good at with both being a daughter and being a mother, because you have the emotional capacity to be present, because you're not overextending yourself. And then you make decisions like that, and you say, well, screw the culture. If I want, you think that they're going to get better care from a professional that's focused on them than it is that they're getting from me being scattered with different responsibilities. So then you start making slightly different decisions. And obviously, it all different for different people. Some people do thrive being more on the nurturing, caring side, so they might not make the same decision that I would do in the exact same situation. But it's a case of, when it's a genuine act of service coming from your overflow, because that is what makes you happy, you're not going to end up burnt out and resentful. So if you're starting to pick up on those feelings that you're like, if I say no, I feel guilty, but if I say yes, it's heavy, or vice versa, depending on what the circumstances are, that's one of the signs that you're saying, I might have an alignment problem here, and I might be moving from the expectations of other people. Because sometimes when you're like high achieving and high functioning, always the strong one, that becomes your identity. So it's very difficult. And I know, and I have a lot of compassion for anybody else who feels that way, because that was me. You are so attached to the idea that you hold everybody and that you're the one who's calm in the storm, that you're like, oops, I have created an identity. It's not actually me. And I'm holding on to that identity because I don't know what who to be if I'm not that person. It feels like it's you, but if you dig deep enough, you realize that actually was a safety mechanism. And there's a lot of your personality is actually trauma responses. So it's all starts with the willingness to face the objective truth of you might not be the person you think yourself to be. And then maybe if you find out that you are, but it's about being to have that curiosity to challenge yourself and face yourself in a mirror and see.
Yeah, because it's true, especially when you're a high achieving or just always on the go, or the super moms that are out there. It's just it, and it, when you finally break down, because you will, you can't be going at that level all the time. You feel like you're letting people down. You feel like there's something wrong with you. So it's so difficult. What would you recommend? I think it kind of goes really well with going into, if you have any advice of the things that we could do. We're specifically talking about women, but that could work for men as well, is when you have that guilt to say, I need to set boundaries for myself so that I can show up better for my loved ones or for the situation. Is there anything that we could start doing today that would help us to release that shame or that guilt to say, I need some time for myself. I need to take care of myself first so that I can live my purpose or live my dream and not feel guilty about it.
Yes, so guilt is this, and I would say guilt and shame are two sides of the same coin. They both come from us not meeting an expectation. One is guilt is an expectation that you have on yourself. Shame is external, that's something that tells you you're bad for who you are, while guilt is being recognizing that something you've done was not what you would have wanted to happen. And if you're feeling guilty, it's because you're trying to assert something you want against a worldview that tells you that was wrong.
Right.
So the first thing that you can do is seeing is, are these actually your values, or are these values that you're living by that you did not choose? And that's, it sounds simple. It's one of those things that are kind of like simple, but not necessarily easy. Because it's very difficult to unpack where things are coming from, knowing that we carry everything biologically in our bodies from the generations before us. We are in a culture where we're exposed to it all along. So this is where I kind of like do the inner work, and it can help to have someone to do it with rather than doing it yourself, because if someone can then challenge you and see past your blind spots. So that is one. It's not that you can't do this work for yourself, but you have to be a very self-aware person. It's kind of like a slightly more advanced thing. Like even using AI can be helpful. So if you're looking at this and being like, yeah, that's nice for you to say, but I don't have the resources available to go and do that. It's not like you have to just have a trained professional. There are a lot of reasons why a trained professional has the expertise to help you. There's no risk that you're gonna have bad advice, because obviously AI is collecting from the internet, is not a person who knows how to hold the space. But
Right.
it has that dynamic if you're good enough with your self-awareness. So you can like interrogate where the guilt is coming from until you get to a point where you match your identity to an identity that doesn't feel guilty without pushing it. Because that's the thing that I see a lot in people who do this kind of like inner work, and they get stuck in loops of this healing and always looking for a block and always doing things. And they're always coming from this identity of they're doing something wrong, and keep searching and searching and searching for what it is that they need to fix. But they never do the kind of work that I do, which is aligning you with the coherence of who you are in a way that feels safe, so that then when you do something, you don't regress back to the identity that feels comfortable when it's too uncomfortable to sit with, oh, oops, I had to put the boundary, and someone else is projecting their own inability to manage their emotions because I've done it for them for 30 years, try to make me step back and be like, okay, no, I can't hold. You're annoying me too much with all of your requests. I'm just gonna go back to doing what I was doing because it's the easiest things. Oh, that kind of makes sense. I feel like I've gone a little bit roundabout, but that is why I do personally believe that this work is important, and that's why I do it as my main work. But it is not that you can't do it yourself, is that is how you are in that position for now.
Oh, I agree. It's so difficult because in the whole process, we're telling ourselves stories to justify why we're not living our purpose or our dream, or and because we're not living, we're not a, we don't have the right identity. we're living on somebody else's expectations. So it's hard to call ourselves out on us these stories that are not true, but we're using them. So working with somebody else does help to set you back on track and say, okay, this is not the reality. This isn't real. This is just something that you're telling yourself. And it's hard to accept. I think the ego there hurts. I've been called out a couple of times. I have my sister who's just great because she holds that space for me, but she will call me out on my on my BS often, every time you're just like, oh, you're right. I don't want you to be right, but you're right. So it is important to have to work with somebody just to get yourself out of that. I do appreciate you sharing that because it's a gentle way as well. I don't think it's you do have to take the time to process it and accept it so that you don't go back to those old habits. So I like the fact that you mentioned that to reassure people that it's not a quick fix. It's not something that's, and then when you think you're okay, something else will happen and then you're back at it. So I think it's, yes, you have a very gentle approach to it, and that's what I appreciate about your work.
Thank you. I received that.
Yeah, that's
Right.
great. Do you have anything coming up? I could talk to you so much more, but I just want to ask you, do you have anything coming up, or are you working on anything right now that you'd like to share with us?
I'm working on a really beautiful collaboration with two friends of mine in this space, one who is the most wonderful weight release coach, and the other one who is the most wonderful voice activator. And we haven't finalized the details at the time of recording, but I'm pretty sure they will be finalized by the time this is going to actually reach the people listening. So I can't really speak too much about it, but I'm sure that if anybody who's heard what we discussed today feels like actually I'm in that place, you want to be in this experience and it's going to be free. So nothing to worry about. That you may be like, I know I had a very self-sacrificial mother who to this day still uses me as the excuse for not having pursued her dreams. So I know how it may feel like, well, but my kid wants to go to whatever and it's expensive. So I appreciate that not everybody may be in the position where you're like, oh, yes, a high price container, you can come in. No, it's accessible to everybody. So yeah, I would love to see you there.
Oh, I
And
love that.
that is the one thing coming up in the new year for getting everybody set up in this difficult time, energetically speaking, because we have the new year, which is very masculine driven, like calendar saying we start on January 1st, and then all of us were like more energetically attuned. I'm kind of like, this is the depths of winter, and I just want to hibernate and sit in the void and do nothing but wait for inspiration to come and get out when we leave Pisces season and get into Aries. And from the astrology point of view, that being one of the types of archetypes I use, which then again, Greek mythology has very close. The Western tropical astrology is the archetypes from Greek mythology. Yeah, that we're kind of like in this void. It's the darkness of winter where the seeds have being already planted and we're waiting to bloom, that sometimes our society being with this like Protestant capitalistic kind of mindset where our worth is attached to productivity, we don't appreciate just what a gift it is as a time. So that is what we want to do with this container, creating that space to appreciate these time of growth.
Oh, that's wonderful. It's so great to hear that it's accessible to everybody because it's in the world that we are right now with these high ticket events and it's great. It's wonderful, but it's not inclusive. It leaves out a lot of people who just are not able to. So the fact that you offer something that's accessible to all is wonderful. And I am with you 100% with this. Having to start during the time that we're in supposed to be in hibernation. I never got that. We always used to do at the equinox, the spring equinox was for us the time to start acting, but you just kind of it's rest, recharge your battery during the coldest months of the year. Before we wrap up, I want to ask you if there's anything else you'd like to share, just because so many other questions I want to ask you, but is there anything that you feel called to share with our listeners today to kind of encourage them to do the work and to with grace, and just be gentle with themselves while they're doing it?
Yeah, I would say that every small thing that you can do to be more authentic. And I know that authenticity is kind of like a bit of a buzzword. And sometimes it can become a persona because a lot of people seem to think it's about being seen in the mess or that kind of things, which there is definitely some power. If you've never been witnessed and you always had to perform for others, there's definitely some power in that. But you're more than your mess. So that's not the whole of your authenticity. Authenticity for me really is just about being able to be fully expressed in who you are. Borrowing from Dr. Mateo, I mentioned earlier, he uses this image a lot of the baby when it's the first born. They completely self-express, they have a need, they cry. And so we lose that because we get told that we're a burden on the people around us and whatever not. And you can have compassion for the people who raised you, even when they've been completely horrible and they should never be near you, but people who can like have the very big T trauma. So sometimes it feels like forgiveness, especially in Christianized societies where we still either people within the religion or the people who've been affected on a cultural level by like 2000 years of cultural domination in Europe. Think of forgiveness as basically wiping the slate completely blank and acting like things have not happened. The way I see it, you can hold people accountable and still forgive them because it's about releasing the charge of seeing yourself as the victim and just like letting that go because it's good for you not to hold on to the grudge rather than because they deserve any of it. So you can pretty much keep saying, my parents failed me because they did not have the capacity to be good parents. And you can also not feel a victim of it. And so that is the moment where you start realizing you should never have been made to feel wrong. And the journey that you're doing, if you're doing personal development work, isn't about fixing you, making you better. It's just about bringing you back to that baby who had no sense of shame and was fully expressed. So it's a gift and an offering at the altar of yourself.
That's right. I love that. That's such a beautiful message because, yeah, we're not broken. We're just, there's nothing to fix. It's just to redirect us back to who we truly are. I love that. Thank you so much for sharing.
You're most welcome. And thank you for actually having that really strong reaction to it because
Yeah,
you could
no, it's not as
inform
beautiful.
everybody.
We need to hear it. I even have goosebumps just to hear it. But yeah, you just, it's, I work in early childhood education, so I see it, you know, the child just kind of slowly unraveling and you're just like, no, just put him back together, you know, but it's difficult because that's just the way we work in a society right now is all these expectations and pressure. The younger, I mean, they're getting younger now. They're expected already to be able to read and they, you know, they don't even speak yet. So it's difficult to be able to give them that space where they can really be themselves and explain themselves and take up the space that they deserve to. So I do appreciate you sharing that with all of us. I'd like to add, this is a question I love to ask. I'd like to end with just a beautiful note, but what do you want to be when you grow up? Or what would you like to do when you grow up?
That's quite an interesting question because if I usually people ask it as a kind of like, what did you want to be when you grew up, when you were like little, which assumes that we are stopped now. And like the answer then would have been, I wanted to be a paleontologist. And I'm only mentioning it because if you think about it, paleontologists excavate things. So getting to be working with the shadows is a form of excavating. But the one dreams I have two. I'd love to release a music album and actually kind of like have at least one concert. Like that is one of the things I was like, I nearly did it as a teenager and didn't do it. And another one, I want to be the director of photography on a film.
Oh, those are beautiful things to do. Oh, wow, I love that.
Yeah, so wait for me to have my Dolly Parton era when I'm like 70 and I can really get like full on rock star vibes. Or maybe I'll do it sooner. Who knows?
I love that. That's why I love asking that question because it can be anything, and I could ask you this 5 years from now, and It'll be completely different. I just love
Yeah.
it. I can't wait to see that, though. I can't wait to see your name pop up in the credits. It'll be wonderful. If anybody want to learn more about the work that you do, or talk to you, or if they have questions, how could they reach you? What's the best way for them to get in contact with you?
Okay, I do have a website, so there's kind of you can read things, and I'm slowly working to having my entire methodology and worldview and philosophy on my blog on there. So that would be alexisnave.com. And pretty much if you put my name in Google, that's how everybody looks for me. So on a fun fact, people come to me with like, oh, would you like our SEO service? And I'm just kind of like, people don't seem to be coming to me for looking for what I do. People are so strongly looking for me specifically. So I'm like, do I really want SEO? And then easiest way to reach me probably is actually Instagram, which would be this is Alexis Nave. I may not look active on it, but I would get the messages if someone slides in the DMs. So I do have my winter not really wanting to be too visible and kind of like unpacking my own things as we go. Because that is one of the things that a lot of people do not realize. We have to do the work to be able to hold everybody else. Otherwise, we are going to just end up projecting our own it to other people. So
Yes, that is
that
so
is
true.
not sometimes I know from like coming from the very high achieving, perfect type A student, it's kind of like, I don't like feeling like I never arrived and I'm not like the expert the way that would be popular on LinkedIn. But that's the nature of the work. You're always going to be unraveling different things as you face deeper and deeper challenges. So give yourself some grace if you're listening and you're feeling like you never arrived and you've been doing this work for a while. It's going to be a ride that we're here for the entire life. Nothing wrong with you.
That's so important to mention. Yeah, it's not always easy. And I will be sure to add the website and your Instagram information in the comments so people can have a look there and
I'm
reach you if
gonna
they do. I
leave
really
you to
do.
sign up for the event I mentioned. So if anybody was interested in that, they're gonna find it easily. So probably
Yes.
not gonna be in the main navigation. So.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah, that's important. Yeah, because we do want to participate in that event. I do appreciate it. Thank you so much, Alexis, for joining me. I could have you on another time. Anytime you want to come, talk to us about your new projects and your album, everything else.
Would love to do that.
I
Thank
would have
you.
really loved. Thank you again. You've given us such a beautiful insight on your work, but on the work that we can do for ourselves as well. And do appreciate. I love the energy you bring as well. It's just so soothing. It's soothing to me. I really do appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I really received that compliment. Thank you.
Thank you. For everybody listening or watching, don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe to whichever channel you're listening or watching from. Don't forget to check out Alexis as well so that you can get the information you need. And until next time, stay safe, stay awesome, and we'll talk soon.